Eddie, the Collegiate Senior. Chapter 9. Summer Break, Part 1. Sitting by their pool on the first Saturday of summer break, Kathy tells Eddie, "We have all summer. Is there anything special that you want to do?" With no hesitation, Eddie replies, "Yeah. I want to go back to the beach." Kathy exclaims, "Yeah. That's a good idea. I miss my beach time. And we can take my bus." Eddie replies, "That would be fun. We can see who else wants to go and all ride together." Kathy exclaims, "Yeah, buddy. Back to the beach." Eddie suggests, "Well, let's go." Kathy tells Eddie, "Go and find our towels and beach stuff. I'll go see who wants to go with us." Running up as Eddie is loading the bus, Kathy energetically announces, "Paula and Mark are coming, and so are Erica and Bobby B." Eddie asks, "Did you call Braden?" Kathy replies, "Yeah, sort of. I talked to Wendy. Braden is working today. But they can meet us for pizza after. And Mitchell and Amber are doing their own thing. And Barbara and Johnson have other plans. And I didn't call Karen or anyone else. I forgot who likes the beach." Eddie tells Kathy, "Wow. You sound excited." Kathy replies, "I am. We're going to the beach." Eddie tells Kathy, "Wow, Katerina. If I knew the beach made you this happy, we would have gone more during our college days." Kathy and Eddie head out, picking up Mark and Paula on the way. Then heading over to Bobby B's construction site, they pick up Bobby B and Erica, who are doing little more than watching the hose fill their pool with water. Mark walks into the backyard, yelling out, "Hey, it's looking good out here. Bobby B and Erica's house is almost completed." Doing much of the work themselves, the project moved along slowly but, with Mark's supervision, everything was done properly. Bobby B and Erica get in the bus, and the group heads to the beach, taking a little side trip to get Bobby B's and Erica's beach gear. On the way, Erica asks Bobby B, "Hey, when is my bus going to be ready?" Bobby B replies, "I'm working on it." Giving a more accurate answer, Eddie tells Erica, "It has about 5 more hours of work left to go. It needs an alignment, the instrumentation needs to be connected, and the underside should be rust-proofed in a few areas." Erica asks, "So, it can be done on Monday?" Eddie replies, "Technically, yes." Bobby B, who has been taking his time with the project, wishes that Eddie had not said anything. Erica will now expect the bus to be ready on Monday. Now curious, Erica asks, "Why does it have to be rust-proofed?" Eddie explains, "Vehicles are made of steel. All vehicles have areas that are susceptible to rust. It's a whole lot easier to prevent rust than to deal with it once it's happened." Eddie then jokingly mentions, "Some cars rust so badly that, if you drive them into the garage, turn the lights out, and listen very carefully, you can hear them rust." Erica thinks Eddie is serious and doesn't get the joke. Eddie then tells Erica, "Why don't you come by Monday and crack the whip on Bobby B? He might have it on the road by the end of the day." Bobby B is unusually silent, knowing exactly what he will be doing come Monday. But Eddie can have the Volkswagen bus finished in less than 2 hours if he helps Bobby B. Left to himself, Bobby B would be finished with the bus in about a week or two. Arriving at the beach, Kathy announces, "Awesome. The beach is still here." Searching for a parking place, Kathy is fortunate to find one close to the concession area. The group gathers their stuff and heads to the water. Being early in the season, the beach is crowded today primarily because many colleges and universities have just gotten out for summer vacation. As they are laying out their towels, Paula asks, "What do we do when we're at the beach again?" "I forgot." Kathy explains, "I make fun of you. Then you chase me. And we play tag. And I always win." Paula replies, "Do not. Kathy tells Paula, "Yeah, I do." Paula tells Kathy, "Oh no, you don't." Kathy replies, "Not on your life, girl. I always win." Paula exclaims, "Not." Kathy laughs, telling Paula, "See? That's what we used to do at the beach." Paula relents, telling Kathy, "Okay. You got me." Kathy smiles and replies, "Yeah. I got you really good, didn't I?" Everyone lays out in the sun for a while. After about a half hour, they go into the water. On the way, Paula asks Kathy, "Can you go in the water when you're pregnant?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. I don't see why not." Watching from the water, they see how crowded the beach really is today. Riding a few waves, Kathy exclaims, "I really missed the beach." Everyone echoes Kathy's sentiment, all realizing they haven't spent enough time at the beach. Lunchtime comes, and there is only one choice for food, which is the concession stand at the beach. Kathy, Paula, and Erica find a picnic table as the guys go up and place the order. Waiting in line, Eddie tells Bobby B, "I hope I didn't get you in too much trouble." Bobby B asks, "What are you talking about?" Eddie replies, "It sounds like Erica now wants her bus by Monday, at closing time." Bobby B admits, "I really should finish that. After that big rainstorm the other week, it would be nice to have it done." The guys bring lunch, which is pizza, back to the picnic table. Kathy mentions, "I should have got something else. We're having pizza for dinner." Eddie tells Kathy, "You could always order a calzone." Paula comments, "A calzone is a pizza with all the goodies on the inside and the crust on the outside." Kathy replies, "Is not." Paula tells Kathy, "Don't argue with me, girl. I'm Italian. It's the same ingredients." Mark suggests Paula might be right about that. Paula tells Mark, "Of course. I'm totally right." After eating three slices of pizza, Kathy asks Paula, "Are you okay?" Paula replies, "Yeah. How come you're asking?" Kathy points out, "You've only eaten a half slice of pizza." Paula replies, "My stomach hasn't been feeling too good recently." Kathy asks, "How long has this been going on?" Paula replies, "About 2 weeks." Kathy confidently proclaims, "You're pregnant." Paula suddenly stands up and exclaims, "I never thought about that. I bet you're right." Kathy smiles and calmly replies, "I'm always right." Just as surprised as Paula, Mark asks Paula, "Does this mean you're having a baby?" Not thinking correctly, Paula energetically replies, "Yeah. That's what happens when you're pregnant. You end up with a baby. And how am I going to teach school with a baby? Now, what am I going to do? We have to get the baby's room ready. And now we need a bus too, like Kathy's. And there's all this stuff to do." Kathy tells Paula, "Calm down, girl. Come up for air. If you're pregnant, you have 9 months to get the room ready. And besides, you don't even know for sure that you're pregnant." Paula tells Kathy, "I'm 2 weeks late." Erica comments, "Yeah, she's pregnant, all right. Definitely pregnant. No way out of this one." After lunch, the group heads back to their towels to lie out in the sun for a while. Paula and Mark quietly discuss the possibility that Paula is pregnant. Bobby B and Erica quietly talk about setting their wedding date. And Kathy, who is eating for two, is also sleeping for two and falls asleep in the sun. And Eddie, glad to be back at the beach, lays back, listening to the waves crash on the shore. Thinking back as everyone drifts into relaxation, Eddie recalls when he first rode his bicycle to the beach. About 10 years old at that time, the 22-mile round trip seemed like a very long way to go. As the years went by, the trip felt like it got shorter and shorter. After a while, the trip to the beach was effortless for Eddie. 12 years later, after a lot of training, Eddie is indisputably the fastest man in the world. After another hour on the shore, everyone decides to call it a day and head home. On the way, Paula asks, "Are we still getting pizza?" Kathy replies, "Sure. But I want to change out of my swimsuit first." Paula suggests, "Then, why don't we all meet at the pizzeria with Braden and Wendy?" Kathy replies, "That sounds good. And get some prenatal vitamins on your way there. Get some vitamin B6 while you're at it, and take it at every meal. That will help with your stomach." Paula asks, "How do you know this?" Kathy replies, "From one of our classes." Paula comments, "I must have missed that day." Kathy drops everyone off at their home, only to meet again in an hour or so for dinner. Bright and early Monday morning at Eddie's service station, Erica arrives with Bobby B, ready to crack the whip getting her Volkswagen bus finished. Somewhere between spring break and now, the bus that Bobby B has been working on began to be referred to as Erica's bus. Kathy also arrives early in the morning so that Eddie can tune up her dune buggy for the summer. Eddie gets to work, tuning up Kathy's dune buggy, as Kathy puts on a fresh coat of wax. Eddie casually mentions to Kathy, "In a few months, it might be hard getting in and out of your dune buggy." Kathy flexes her biceps muscles, telling Eddie, "Not for me, buddy. I got this down." Kathy effortlessly hops into her dune buggy and back out again, demonstrating that, in her third trimester, getting in and out of her dune buggy poses no problem at all. Over at Bobby B's service bay, Bobby B connects the instrumentation on his, or Erica's, Volkswagen bus. Erica, after receiving instruction from Eddie, applies rust proofing to the rust-prone areas. Erica asks Bobby B, "What's next after we finish the wiring and the rust proofing?" Bobby B replies, "The wheel alignment." Erica asks, "Then, after the wheel alignment, I can drive it?" Bobby B replies, "I think so." Wanting to be sure of himself, Bobby B yells out to Eddie, "Hey, Eddie. After the wiring, rust proofing, and wheel alignment, is there anything else?" Eddie yells back, "No. But you might want to get a coat of wax on it while it's still clean." The phone rings, and Kathy yells out to Eddie, "I'll get it." Kathy heads over to the shop phone, taking the call. Kathy talks on the phone for quite a while, prompting Eddie to ask Kathy, "Is there something I can help with?" Kathy shakes her head and, using a hand gesture, indicates to Eddie that she has everything under control. Eddie tells Bobby B, "I wonder what she's signing me up for this time." Bobby B smiles and replies, "She's probably playing car psychologist." Eddie laughs and tells Bobby B, "This one is going to be really interesting." Finished with the 15-minute phone call, Kathy walks over to Eddie, who asks, "What was that all about?" Kathy replies, "Someone wants a van repaired." Eddie asks, "And?" Kathy replies, "She asked if she can bring it over now." Eddie asks, "What did you tell her?" Kathy replies, "I told her she could." Bobby B and Erica, listening to Eddie and Kathy's conversation, both know something is up. Eddie asks Kathy, "So, what's wrong with the van?" Kathy replies, "It doesn't run well." Messing around with Kathy and not really expecting an answer, Eddie asks, "What color is the van?" Kathy replies, "Yellow." Sitting on the floor behind the engine of the dune buggy, Eddie stands up and asks Kathy, "Okay, Katerina. Spill the beans. What have you signed me up for this time?" Kathy smiles and replies, "What makes you think I signed you up for something?" Eddie laughs and replies, "For one, knowing the color of the vehicle is not exactly too important when servicing it. Knowing what's wrong with it might be a little more helpful." Kathy tells Eddie, "Well, I don't know exactly what's wrong with it." Bobby B interjects, "This is going to be an interesting afternoon. I'm going to hang out and see this one." Kathy sighs and confesses, "Okay. So, that was Provost Layton. She said her mother's van doesn't run well, and she wants to get it repaired. And so, she's on her way now, but she said it might take a while to get it here because it doesn't run too good. So, I told her that, when she gets here, I'd drive her home. Oh, and I told her that you can fix it. Eddie asks, what kind of van is it? Kathy replies, I don't know. Eddie laughs and tells Kathy, you don't know. I can tell that this is going to be an interesting repair job. Kathy asks, how do you know? Eddie replies, well, the long run-on sentence and lack of important details kind of gives it away. Bobby B. interjects, at least you know what color the van is. Kathy smiles and is more interested in saying hello to Provost Layton than in her mother's van. Kathy and Eddie finish up the dune buggy, waiting for Provost Layton to arrive. Now that he is finished with rust proofing and wiring up the instrumentation, Bobby B. drives the Volkswagen bus into the alignment bay. Eddie and Bobby B. get working on the alignment, while Kathy and Erica sit in Kathy's dune buggy and talk about what they have planned for the summer. They both have decided that more beach time is on the list. Right before lunch, Provost Layton pulls into the service station driving a 40-year-old van. Glancing outside, Eddie, not seeing a vehicle like the one that drove in for a while, does a double take. Quickly discovering who is behind the wheel, Eddie looks over at Kathy, who jumps out of her dune buggy to go out and greet Provost Layton. Eddie suddenly realizes the scope of Provost Layton's repair job might just be a little more than a routine tune-up. Eddie walks out, telling Provost Layton, good morning. Provost Layton replies, good morning. Well, this is the van. Looking over the van, Eddie tells Provost Layton, I see that. Kathy told me it was yellow. The van Provost Layton drove in today is an Austin service van built on the Austin K30 frame. In its day, the K30 was used for a wide variety of commercial and military vehicles. Eddie is quite impressed that such a vehicle is still in service and in such good condition. Eddie looks over the van, inside and out. Provost Layton tells Eddie, the van has been garaged for the last 30 years. The inside is in really good condition. But the engine apparently needs a lot of work. And when I pressed on the brakes, I heard a bad clicking sound in the front somewhere. Eddie replies, the click is probably a bushing in the suspension that needs to be replaced. That's easy to fix. Eddie tells Provost Layton, let's go inside and write up the service ticket. Eddie writes up the service ticket, discovering that Provost Layton wants the van brought up to original factory specifications. Eddie advises her that, with the smoke coming from the exhaust, the engine probably needs to be rebuilt. In addition, Eddie informs Provost Layton that the parts are not readily available these days, and that acquiring certain parts might take some time. Provost Layton does not seem to care. Neither does Provost Layton have a budget, for she does not seem to care how much the van costs to repair. Eddie, Provost Layton, and Kathy go outside to take another look at the van. Not seeing anything that needs to be done to the interior, Eddie comments, this van has been well taken care of, as if it was someone's home. Provost Layton suddenly walks away. Eddie, however, looking under the dash, is unaware that Provost Layton has walked away. Kathy catches on that Provost Layton is upset about something and follows her. Catching up to Provost Layton, Kathy asks, are you okay? With a tear coming from her eye, Provost Layton replies, I'll be okay. Kathy asks, what's wrong? Provost Layton replies, Eddie said, this van has been well taken care of, as if it was someone's home. From the time that I was born until I was 6 years old, my mom and I lived in this van. It was our home. Kathy gives Provost Layton a hug, whispering, I'm so sorry. I never knew. Taking a walk down the street together, Provost Layton tells Kathy the story she told to Mr. Fraser of how she and her mom lived in the van for 6 years. Provost Layton adds, Mom kept the interior of the van spotless. Everything was clean, and well taken care of. Everything we owned was in Mom's van. My bed, when I was a child, is still in there. When Eddie said that Mom's van has been well taken care of, it went straight to my heart. Someone noticed the 6 years of love my mom put into our home. Kathy and Provost Layton head back to the service station, returning now as very close friends. While Kathy and Provost Layton were away on their walk, Eddie drove the van into a service bay. Kathy's dune buggy now sits outside and is all tuned up and ready for the summer. Seeing Provost Layton and Kathy standing by the dune buggy, Eddie yells out to the Provost, "Provost Layton, I can start on your van this afternoon. I'll break it down and let you know what exactly needs to be done." Provost Layton walks into the service bay and tells Eddie, "That would be great. Thank you very much. But, from now on, please call me Athena." Eddie replies, "Sure. No problem." Kathy asks Athena, "Well, are you ready for me to take you home?" Athena replies, "Sure. And thank you very much for taking me." As Kathy and Athena get into the dune buggy, Athena mentions, "I've never ridden in a dune buggy before." Kathy smiles and replies, "Who knows? You might end up trading your Jaguar in for a dune buggy someday." Kathy starts the engine and drives away to take Athena home. Eddie looks over the engine compartment of the van, wondering where to start. Bobby B walks over and asks, "What is this thing, anyway?" Eddie replies, "It's an Austin K30, which looks like it's in perfect shape, other than the engine." Bobby B asks, "What are you going to do with it?" Eddie replies, "From the sound of the engine, it looks like I'll be doing a complete rebuild." Bobby B asks, "Are you going to do it yourself?" Eddie replies, "No. I'm going to pull the engine, strap it to a pallet, put it on a trailer, and take it to get rebuilt." Asking as many questions as Akinmola today, Bobby B asks, "Who is going to rebuild it?" Eddie replies, "There's a shop down on Sunrise Highway that specializes in these older engines. They can do it faster and better than I can. Some things you just let the experts do." Eddie then gets to work on the Austin, waiting for Kathy to return. Almost finished waxing their Volkswagen bus, Bobby B and Erika get back to work. When Mayor Bradford Jameson was arrested and charged with various crimes, a special election was arranged to fill his position. The date of the special election arrives, and people of the town will elect their new mayor. Running for the office of mayor is Eddie and the comptroller of the town, Mr. Frank Hamilton. Eddie is quite confident that he will win. Mr. Hamilton, on the other hand, is confident that Eddie doesn't stand a chance of winning. Prior to the election, Eddie has sent numerous mailings to the residents of the town, hinting that, if Mr. Hamilton was doing his job properly, Mayor Jameson would not have gotten away with many of the crimes he is accused of. At the top of the list is the environmental impact fee, which was charged to certain local businesses. The environmental impact fees paid landed in the mayor's personal account, a business under the name Environmental Impact, Incorporated. Mr. Hamilton is puzzled how Eddie obtained this and other information. Officer Richard Hayes and the police department endorse Eddie, so it's no secret where the information came from. Mr. Hamilton also sent out numerous mailings to the residents of the town. Mr. Hamilton claims that Eddie, who is an auto mechanic, is unqualified for the position. Mr. Hamilton went so far as to claim that Eddie does not even have a college degree. In one of Eddie's mailings, he presented a copy of his diploma from the university, making Mr. Hamilton look like an idiot. In another mailing, Mr. Hamilton claimed Eddie has no business experience. Eddie countered by placing a picture of Eddie's service station in a subsequent mailing, again making Mr. Hamilton look like an idiot. Since the incident surrounding the former mayor was a high-profile case, coverage of the election is widespread on television and other news outlets. Kathy has a different opinion. Kathy thinks the election is attracting a lot of attention because Eddie is the world record holder in the 100-meter dash and his other track accomplishments. It's quite surprising that, with a total population of about 4,000 people, the town's election has garnered so much attention. Eddie returns home from work, albeit a little late, where Kathy is waiting for him. Kathy asks, "Did you vote?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. I voted on my way home." Kathy tells Eddie, "I voted this morning. The place was packed." Eddie asks, "When is everyone getting here?" Kathy replies, "Probably around 5 o'clock. The pizza will be here about then. The polls close at 6 o'clock. And Angela Meadows, from the television station, told me that she talked with the election board and that they should have the results by the end of the 6 o'clock news." Eddie asks, "When does Angela get here?" Kathy replies, "Somewhere around 5 o'clock. She doesn't want to miss the pizza." Braden drives up, wearing his police uniform, and knocks on the door. Opening the door, Eddie gives Braden a fist bump, telling him, "Yo, bro. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you helping me out." Braden replies, "No problem." Braden, along with Johnson and a few others, will be the security at Eddie's front gate, keeping the news media out, except for Angela and her news crew. Over the next hour or so, a few of Eddie and Kathy's friends come over, just to hang out, waiting to see who won the election. The pizza arrives right on time. Two boxes of pizza and a slew of drinks are dropped off for Braden and his security crew at the gate. The remainder of the pizza is then delivered to the house, where everyone is anxiously awaiting the news of who won the election. With the television on in the background, Angela has her headset on, waiting anxiously to get the word of who won from the studio. Angela was informed that the results were promised by 6:30 p.m. As the clock ticks down to that time, tensions rise as everyone waits to hear the news. By 6 o'clock, the party at Eddie's house is in full swing. Angela is standing by, waiting to hear the results of the election before they are broadcast. Eddie granted the television station where Angela works exclusive rights to a post-election interview. Braden and his security crew are at Eddie's front gate, enforcing those rights. Downtown, at Frank Hamilton's office where there is massive television coverage, another crew is standing by in case Mr. Hamilton wins. Hamilton, who invited all the news outlets, is convinced that Eddie does not stand a chance of winning. Over the casual pizza dinner, Kathy confidently mentions to everyone, "Eddie is going to win. I just know it." Paula asks, "How can you be so sure?" Kathy explains, "No one is going to vote for someone who is already associated with the town, since Mayor Jameson is pretty much a crook. So, Eddie is going to win." Everyone hopes that Kathy, who calls the events on the track accurately, is just as accurate calling this election. With 6:30 p.m. rapidly approaching, Eddie asks Angela, "Have you heard anything yet?" Angela, sitting on the sofa, listening carefully over the wire to the studio, replies, "They say the election officials are almost finished counting. We should know any minute now." Angela stands up, walking to where the television camera is set up, suggesting that the announcement is imminent. Angela can be heard saying, "Yes. Okay. Got it," over the wire to the studio. It's anyone's guess what is being said on the studio side. Angela, understanding that the announcement is about to be made, waves Eddie over to the camera. The cameraman focuses in on Angela as she announces, "We're on in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Good evening, everyone. This is Angela Meadows here with Edward Boganskaya, as we await the official announcement of the election results from the election board. Edward, please share your thoughts with our audience on today's election." Eddie replies, "This has been an interesting couple of weeks, Angela. We've put the facts out there in no uncertain terms. It's up to the people to decide whether they want to change or keep going down the corrupt path this town has been on for several years." With the viewers' televisions on split screen, Angela suddenly gets the results of the election from the studio and announces, "Hold on for a second," as she listens to the announcement from the studio. Angela then announces, "I just got word that the election board has announced a winner. The official count is Edward Boganskaya, 1,143 votes, and Frank Hamilton, 92 votes. Congratulations, Edward, on a landslide victory." The split television screen focuses on Eddie, dropping the feed from Mr. Hamilton's office. As Eddie's friends in the room cheer, Angela asks, "Tell us your thoughts, Edward. What's running through your mind right now?" Knowing what he was going to say well ahead of time, Eddie announces, "My thoughts right now, Angela, is to first clean up the mess left by my predecessor. That, as everyone knows by now, is the number one reason I got into this race." Angela asks Eddie, "Can you share with our viewers some of your plans?" Eddie replies, "First and foremost is to unravel the mess left by the former mayor. I plan to bring in an independent accounting firm to review the town's books. Once that is taken care of, we're going to return whatever money we can to the local businesses who have been swindled by my predecessor. Then, we'll do whatever is necessary to get the exorbitant tax situation under control." Angela further interviews Eddie, who hints at a few of his plans for the future of the town. Next in line to be interviewed by Angela is one of the town's residents, Dr. Gerhard Zunde. Dr. Zunde walks up, shakes Eddie's hand, telling him, "Congratulations, Edward. As usual, you've won the race." Catching Dr. Zunde's innuendo, Eddie laughs and replies, "Thank you, Dr. Zunde." Eddie steps aside, and Angela introduces Dr. Zunde, announcing, "I have with me now Dr. Gerhard Zunde, who lives just around the corner from Edward." Dr. Zunde is the athletic director at Northside High School and the field events coach at the State University, not far from here. Dr. Zunde tells Angela, "Good evening, Angela. It's great to see you once again." Angela asks, "Dr. Zunde, please tell us your thoughts on the election." Dr. Zunde replies, "First of all, getting rid of the corruption was the first goal. I am very confident we will see that goal met shortly. The crime problem in the area, which was linked to the former mayor, appears to have been solved by Officer Richard Hayes. I am glad to see the County Police Department came forward with a strong endorsement of Eddie. I understand that the first item on Mayor Boganskaya's agenda is to do something about the ridiculous taxes the residents of this town pay. Dr. Zunde, among others, knows the taxes are way out of line with other towns in the area." On the subject of taxes, Angela asks Dr. Zunde, "High taxes. That's a subject I think we all can relate to. What can you tell us about that?" Dr. Zunde, who was already briefed and prepared to answer Angela's question, replies, "Angela, the taxes in this area are so high, they are causing property values to drop. I'm not aware of too many areas where the monthly tax bill is far greater than the average mortgage payment. When the taxes get this high, Angela, prospective buyers move to a neighboring town. Mayor Boganskaya is in the process of preparing a proposal to cut the property taxes in half. For one, I am definitely looking forward to that." Angela tells the listeners, "That's something I think all of us would welcome." Dr. Zunde and Angela talk some more, addressing other concerns of the town that have been unaddressed for years. The evening winds down around 9 p.m. Braden and his security team comes inside, telling Eddie, "Congratulations. I heard you came in first place. You got the gold medal." Eddie replies, "Yeah, bro. Like Mr. Fraser always says, only one person wins the race. The first thing I'm going to do tomorrow is to tell Mr. Hamilton, congratulations. You won the silver medal." Braden laughs and tells Eddie, "That's gonna be funny. I wish I could be there to see that." Mark tells Eddie, "Hey, you were right." Not having a clear context of what Mark is referring to, Eddie asks, "About what?" Mark replies, "My neighbor. We started throwing our trash in his trash cans, and now he brings his trash cans in when he gets home from work. Eddie tells Mark, "See that, bro? There's more than one way to solve those kinds of problems." Paula mentions, "It was those two steaks that went bad that probably got him moving." Kathy laughs and asks, "You put two bad steaks in his trash can?" Paula replies, "I sure did. And they cooked out there and stank for a whole day." Eddie smiles and replies, "Problem solved." Once everyone is gone, Kathy asks Eddie, "So, what's next? What does a mayor do?" Eddie replies, "The first thing I'm going to do is attend the meeting I set up with Mr. Davies, Mr. Rice, and Ralph Miles tomorrow. I'll get them to look over the town's books and get moving on lowering the taxes." Eddie was so confident that he would win the election that he already planned tomorrow's meeting well in advance. Kathy replies, "I'd love to be there for that meeting." Eddie replies, "Then, come. It's not like anyone is going to kick you out." Kathy replies, "I think I will." Eddie tells Kathy, "Oh, and I have to fire Giuseppe via Otto, that is, if he's still on the town payroll." Kathy replies, "Yeah. Via Otto. Get rid of him. Put that on the top of the list." Eddie and Kathy clean the house up a bit and get ready for their early day tomorrow. A few weeks later, Eddie is at work at the service station when Officer Richard Hayes drives in. Officer Hayes yells out to Eddie, "What's up, Mayor?" Walking out from behind Provost Layton's mother's van, Eddie yells back, "What's up?" Officer Hayes smiles and exclaims, "I got the promotion. On the first of next month, I'll officially be Captain Hayes." Eddie and Bobby B. both give Richard a high five and offer their congratulations, easily telling that Richard is very happy. Eddie asks Richard, "I guess this means that you'll not be on the road anymore." Richard replies, "Not much. But I'll still stop by and say hi to you guys. Officer Wilson will be taking my day shift. And we have a few new recruits." Eddie replies, "Yeah. You have to stop by so I can give you the stock tips." Richard replies, "Thank you again for those. Sandy has really taken an interest in the stock market. She takes the rental income from our old home and, after paying the expenses, invests it." Remembering something he has been meaning to ask Eddie, Richard mentions to Eddie, "I talked to Sandy. She's really interested in a Volkswagen bus, but with the Porsche engine. How do I get the ball rolling?" Eddie tells Richard, "If you guys pick up a bus, I can take care of finding the engine and doing the modifications." Richard explains, "Sandy already test drove a Volkswagen bus. She likes it, and the kids like it. All of a sudden, she's not so happy with the four-door sedan." Eddie replies, "I can see that. There's a lot more room in the bus." Richard asks, "So, what do I need to do next?" Eddie replies, "Buy a bus. Bring it here, and I'll take care of the rest." Richard tells Eddie, "Thank you. I'll get moving on that real soon." Reverting back to the original topic, Bobby B. comments, "Erica said something about her father getting promoted to police chief." Richard explains, "The news just came out this week. Captain Gabriel was Chief Hansen's first choice to take his place as chief. For the position of captain, the other guy strong in the running was Mueller. The deciding factor, I think, was this Jameson character's case. I have you guys to thank for that." Eddie tells Richard, "All we do is tell you what we see." Richard replies, "And if you guys didn't do that, that Maurice Crumb character would still be dealing drugs over at the high school." Richard then informs Eddie, "By the way, you and Mark really did a number on Mayor Jameson and this Gloomer character. They are not doing too well. They've both suffered severe concussions. Gloomer is learning how to walk again. And this Jameson character now claims to not remember anything about the incident." Eddie replies, "And I'm sure he's forgotten all about his involvement in the gambling ring, too. Richard laughs, saying, "That wouldn't surprise me." Eddie replies, "I'm not really sure what those two idiots expected when they attack someone with a knife." Richard comments, "They are lucky that's all that happened to them." As we always say, deadly force is best addressed with deadly force. Looking around the shop, Richard curiously asks, "What in the world is that?" Eddie replies, "It's Provost Layton's mother's van. It's an Austin K30 configured as a service van." Richard comments, "I haven't seen anything like that on the road since I was a kid." Eddie replies, "It's more than 40 years old. I'm restoring it to factory specs." "Well, maybe a little better than factory specs." Richard asks, "Better than factory specs?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. When this was new, the top speed was somewhere around 55 or 60 miles per hour. I had the engine bored out, and I'm going to turbocharge it. When I'm done, it might just do 0 to 60 in 15 or 20 seconds and get up to 80 miles per hour." Richard comments, "It looks as if it just came out of the showroom." Eddie replies, "Other than the mechanicals and a few minor items, it's in near perfect condition." Richard looks over the van, then tells Eddie and Bobby B, "I guess I'd better get back on the road. I just wanted to give you guys the good news, and thank you for all your help." Eddie replies, "Congratulations, again." Eddie and Bobby B get back to work. Richard gets back on the road, counting down the days until he is police captain. Early morning, beginning at 7 a.m., Eddie generally fulfills his duties as mayor, which takes minimal time out of his schedule. Eddie then heads to the service station, arriving by 10 a.m. Eddie's first order of business as mayor was to have the law firm of Davies and Rice, LLP, and his accountant, Ralph Miles, audit the town's books and finances. Today, in a conference room at the town's administration building, Eddie receives the final report. Present today during the meeting are Eddie, Mr. Davies, Mr. Rice, and Mr. Miles. Also present is the town's comptroller, Mr. Hamilton, the head of the planning department, Mr. Bernstein, and the tax assessor, Mr. Jennings. Deborah, the administrative assistant to the mayor, will be taking the minutes. Eddie opens the meeting, announcing, "It looks like we're all here and ready to begin. So, let's get down to business." Eddie, neither a politician nor a typical businessman, asks Mr. Davies, "So, what did we find out?" Mr. Hamilton, a bit peeved at Eddie's way of opening such an important meeting, shakes his head. Interrupting Eddie, Mr. Hamilton asks, "I realize you haven't held the position of mayor very long, sir. But, aren't we going to follow Robert's rules of order?" Eddie replies, "No. We're going to follow Eddie's rules of order. And those rules are that I ask the questions, and I expect answers." Eddie and Mr. Hamilton have already had a few run-ins. Eddie is not in the mood to hear Mr. Hamilton's shit today. Mr. Hamilton suspects that he is in for a bumpy ride during the course of this meeting. Just to annoy Mr. Hamilton, asking exactly like he asked before, Eddie asks Mr. Davies again, "So, what did we find out?" Mr. Davies takes the floor, stating, "To be honest, every time we discover the answer to a question, three more questions are raised. But let me start from the top, with item number one on the list." Eddie replies, "Okay. What do you got?" Mr. Davies explains, "The township contracts with the county to provide services such as garbage collection, water, sewer, road maintenance, and all other services typically provided by a municipality. The charges for those services to the town's residents have been typically marked up 100% or more over what the county would charge for the same service. In some cases, such as water service, businesses pay as much as 500% more." Eddie replies, "Wow. That's surprising. I'd love to hear the explanation of that." Quickly providing an explanation, Mr. Hamilton interjects, "The increase in fees over what the county would charge is generally necessary to cover the billing of the town's residents for the services. And we make sure that the services have been properly rendered. Eddie replies, I'm a little lost here. The county bills for the same services. Their billing is included in the cost of the service. So, please explain. Mr. Hamilton, a 45-year-old finance expert, does not like answering to a 22-year-old auto mechanic. Spouting out mumbo-jumbo, Mr. Hamilton replies, the county has a far greater number of personnel than we do to handle most of these issues. So, many of our expenses are tied up in salaries. Knowing that he is receiving bullshit for an answer, Eddie replies, okay. Got it. Eddie has come to find out that Mr. Hamilton hates the phrase, got it. So, Eddie uses the phrase a lot. Not one to bother with details, Eddie asks, okay. So, what's next on the list? Mr. Davies reports, Mr. Miles can get into the details of this, but there appears to be a lot of undocumented, poorly documented, and unnecessary travel expenses by township employees. Eddie asks, like what? Mr. Davies replies, I would like to defer that question to Mr. Miles, if I may. Mr. Hamilton is beginning to look a little worried in addition to clearly being aggravated and annoyed. Ralph reports to Eddie, over the last 3 years, there have been 22 trips by various township employees to what appears to be resort areas. The expenses reported for these trips were not accompanied by any receipts or documentation. In most of these cases, plane tickets were also issued in the name of family members of township employees, of which there is no accompanying explanation. And what I find most odd is there is no documentation for seminars, continuing education, or business meetings for these trips. Eddie asks, Mr. Hamilton, do you have an explanation for this? Getting irate, Mr. Hamilton replies, some documentation is likely to be found in other files. But, as far as my knowledge goes, I'm not aware of any unapproved travel. Already knowing what is going on behind the scenes, Eddie replies, okay. Got it. We'll look for those files at a later date. Mr. Hamilton is glad to hear that the explanation for unexplained travel will be deferred. That will give Mr. Hamilton enough time to forge the required documentation. From Mr. Hamilton's perspective, he firmly believes the bullshit he is putting out on the table is accepted by all. Wanting some specific information of undocumented and unnecessary travel, Eddie asks Ralph, "Can you give us an example?" Ralph replies, "This past May, one employee took a trip to Miami, Florida, with his wife and 3 children. No documentation exists, other than receipts for plane tickets, hotels, and 1 large check reimbursing undocumented travel expenses." Eddie asks Ralph, who was that employee? Ralph replies, Frank Hamilton. Eddie looks at Mr. Hamilton and bluntly asks, is there any explanation for this, Mr. Hamilton? Now hot under the collar, Mr. Hamilton replies, there must be. I'll look into it and get back with you. Giving Mr. Hamilton a false sense of security, Eddie replies, okay. Got it. That sounds good. Eddie asks, okay. What's next on the list? Mr. Davies replies, you're not going to like this one. Eddie replies, try me, as he puts his feet up on the table. Mr. Davies explains, tens of thousands of dollars over the prior year were transferred from the township's operating account to a company called Environmental Impact Incorporated. Already knowing the answer to the question, Eddie asks, what is Environmental Impact Incorporated? What do they do? Mr. Davies replies, you don't really want to know. But I'll tell you. Environmental Impact Incorporated is a corporation formed by Bradford Jameson. It is a shell corporation with no assets, which, as far as I can tell, conducts no business. Its primary address is listed as being the former mayor's personal residence. And the former mayor is listed by the Secretary of State as the CEO of Environmental Impact Incorporated. Eddie replies, okay. Got it. Eddie asks Mr. Hamilton, do you know what this company, Environmental Impact Incorporated, does? Mr. Hamilton replies, "No, I don't. Just by the name, it sounds like it's a company that Mayor Jameson used to do some sort of environmental studies." Eddie asks Ralph, who signed the checks used to transfer the money in question. Ralph replies, "That would be Mr. Hamilton." Eddie asks Mr. Hamilton, "And you have no idea what Environmental Impact Incorporated does?" Turning a hot shade of red, Mr. Hamilton replies, "No, I don't." Eddie quietly reviews a few documents and announces, "Mr. Hamilton, you're fired. Please leave the building immediately. There is a police officer outside this conference room who will escort you to the door. He will request your keys to the building. I suggest you comply with his request." In total shock, Mr. Hamilton exclaims, "Why? What's this all about? If this is retribution for the election, I'm going to have your head." Eddie calmly and quite confidently replies, "According to the Secretary of State, you are listed as the Secretary of Environmental Impact Incorporated. That would make you an accomplice to the embezzlement charges being brought against Bradford Jameson. Correct me if I'm wrong, sir, but those are grounds for firing you." Mr. Hamilton is silent for a moment, knowing he is guilty of far more than he thinks Eddie knows. Backing down from his demanding tone, Mr. Hamilton demands, "Can I, at least, clean out my office?" Eddie replies, "That won't be necessary. There is a police officer doing that right now for you. They are collecting what they call evidence." Mr. Hamilton slams his chair to the floor, exclaiming, "This is a setup." Eddie replies, "I agree. You set yourself up for this. All we did is catch you." Hearing the commotion from outside the meeting room, Officer Braden, who was hired on a contract basis by Eddie on behalf of the town, walks into the room, asking, "Is everything all right in here? I heard a lot of screaming." Eddie replies, "Yes. Everything's under control. Please escort Mr. Hamilton to the front exit. Please obtain his keys to the front door, his alarm key, and the key to his office. If he fails to comply, take him to the county jail." Braden replies in a military tone, "Yes, sir." Mr. Rice advises Mr. Hamilton, "It would be wise of you to govern yourself according to Mayor Boganskaya's request." Hearing the word jail, Mr. Hamilton is shaking like a leaf in the wind. But jail is where Mr. Hamilton will eventually end up. Neither Eddie nor Braden has any grounds to have Mr. Hamilton transported to the county jail since he is not yet being charged with a crime. Eddie, Braden, Mr. Davies, and Mr. Rice all know that. But Mr. Hamilton does not. So, Mr. Hamilton, in all of his ignorance, complies with Eddie's request. Mr. Hamilton removes the keys from his key ring and voluntarily places them on the table. Eddie reminds Mr. Hamilton that, if he is caught in the building, it will be considered trespassing, and he will be arrested. Braden escorts Mr. Hamilton out of the building, and everyone takes a short break. After the break, Eddie announces, "Now that we've gotten rid of that problem, we can move on to more important issues." Eddie asks Mr. Davies, "Do you have the papers drawn up?" Mr. Davies replies, "Yes," and hands a copy to everyone in the room. Eddie asks Mr. Davies, "Will you please do the honors of explaining this to everyone present? You can probably do a much better job than I can." Mr. Davies replies, "Sure. No problem at all." Mr. Davies begins, "Edward's plan is to dissolve the township and turn the services formerly provided by the town over to the county. Mr. Miles has performed some preliminary estimates, which indicate that dissolving the township will result in, on average, a 45% decrease in property taxes for residences. For businesses, the reduction will be more along the lines of 55%. Dissolving the township will result in the complete closure of the town's administrative offices, thus procuring the aforementioned savings." Interrupting Mr. Davies, Mr. Bernstein asks, "Wait a second. Does that mean that we're all getting laid off?" Mr. Davies answers, "No. If the proposal is accepted, you, Mr. Jennings, and Deborah will be transferred to the county to equivalent positions at their offices. I might add that transferring to the county will involve a substantial increase in salary. And there will no longer be the position of mayor of our town. Mr. Bernstein, Mr. Jennings, and Deborah are all very surprised at what they are hearing. But they all understand the dilemma. After some group discussion, Mr. Davies continues, "The township, however, cannot simply be dissolved by the stroke of a pen. It must be put up to a vote, and the residents will have to approve the dissolution." Holding up a power of attorney document, Mr. Davies explains, "This document allows me to go to the Board of Elections and arrange a special election to vote on the dissolution." The resolution has two parts. The two items that will be put to ballot are first and foremost, the dissolution of the town. Secondly, as an independent item on the ballot, will be the disposal of the town's administration building. Mr. Davies hands the document to Eddie, who signs the document along with a few other documents pertaining to the dissolution. Mr. Davies then announces, "Unless there are any questions, I believe we have covered everything on today's agenda." A few questions are raised by Mr. Bernstein and Mr. Jennings. Their questions are satisfactorily answered by Mr. Davies and Mr. Rice, the attorneys who are now representing the town, and Mr. Miles, who has now been hired as the town's interim accountant. The meeting is adjourned, and Eddie takes the rest of the day off. About a month after Provost Layton dropped off her mother's van, the work on the van has been completed and is ready to be picked up. Driving into the service station with her mother, Provost Layton wonders whether her mother's van will perform as well as expected. After all, the van is more than 40 years old, and the older vehicles do not typically perform as well as the newer ones. Provost Layton walks into the office with her mother, patiently waiting for Eddie to greet them. Eddie walks into the office, where Provost Layton introduces her mother, Julia, to Eddie. Provost Layton tells Eddie, "The plan is to take a trip to the beach in Mom's van. Mom has really been looking forward to it." Eddie replies, "Well, now the van will make it there and back. When I first saw it, I kind of wondered how you even made it here." Provost Layton agrees, telling Eddie, "I know. I was seriously hoping I didn't have to call a tow truck." Eddie tells Provost Layton and her mother, "Well, let's go take a look at it." Walking up to the Austin van, which has the hood opened, Julia exclaims, "Wow. The engine looks brand new." Happy to see that her mother is satisfied with the way the engine looks, for her mother's benefit, Provost Layton asks Eddie, "Tell me about the work you did." Eddie explains, "The engine was completely rebuilt. The cylinders were bored out and now have oversized pistons and valves. I turbocharged the engine, so it now has more horsepower. I put in a bigger radiator. The brakes have been rebuilt. And that click in the front end was a cracked bushing, so I replaced all the bushings. I put an anti-sway bar in. I think you'll find it handles better now. The clutch was shot, so I replaced it. And the tires were all dry rotted, so they were replaced." Julia comments, "The engine, it looks so clean." Eddie tells her, "When I had the engine out, I pressure washed the engine compartment. It was kind of messy in there." Eddie closes the hood and tells Julia and Provost Layton, "Why don't you take it for a drive and see what you think?" Not wanting to wait another second, Julia replies, "I think I will. Come on, Athena. Get in. We're going for a drive." Julia and Athena get into the van. Julia starts the engine, which sounds much smoother than when Provost Layton drove it in a while ago. In her Austin van that looks as if it just came out of the showroom, Julia drives away with a big smile on her face. 10 minutes later, Julia returns to the service station, all excited that her van is roadworthy once again. Getting out of her van, Julia exclaims, "It's better than new. And it actually moves when I press on the gas pedal." Eddie smiles, knowing that the extra effort he put into restoring the vehicle was definitely worth it. Julia continues exclaiming how good her van runs, as Athena opens the rear doors. Taking another look at what was once her home, Athena is secretly very happy that the van has been restored. Eddie and Provost Layton settle up the bill, which Eddie forewarned will be expensive since a lot of work needed to be done and parts are hard to come by. But the bottom line came in a little less than Eddie's original estimate. Athena walks back to the van with Eddie. Julia, still marveling at how the van looks brand new, can't wait to take it to the beach. Athena's mother tells her, "We're going to the beach this weekend." Athena replies, "I'm up for it." Eddie comments, "That's where we were headed to. It's supposed to be a beautiful weekend." As Julia gets in her van to drive away, Eddie takes a photograph of her behind the wheel. Eddie then gets back to work. Walking into the service area, Eddie asks Bobby B, "How's it going?" Bobby B explains, "I dropped the engine. The buyer is going to be here sometime after lunch to pick it up. It's ready for you to modify the frame. And Mark called and said he'll be by sometime around lunch." Eddie replies, "I guess he wants to check on the progress." Bobby B asks, "I wonder why Paula wants a bus." Eddie replies, "The baby, bro. There ain't no way she's getting that baby in and out of the back seat of her Jeep." Bobby B observes, "Mark is going to have to put an addition on his 3-car garage soon." Eddie tells Mark, "I can see that coming." Eddie and Bobby B get back to work on Mark and Paula's Volkswagen bus, reinforcing the frame to accommodate the more powerful engine.